Welcome to The Point. I'm Indy Todd. Today is our Healthy Lifestyles program, and we focus on strategies to create and maintain positive, healthy relationships with food and our bodies. As always, we hope you'll join in the conversation to share your struggles, your strategies, and your successes. We also welcome your ideas on topics for future Healthy Lifestyle programs. 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Last month, our topic was mindful and healthy eating in the midst of a pandemic. So many of you called in to share how you're getting creative in the kitchen. We decided to stick with the topic now that we're over 2 months into the stay-at-home order. And joining us is Dina Irwin, integrative nutritionist at the Community Health Center of Cape Cod. Welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Stacy Richmond, she's an integrative nutrition therapist and founder of Kind Eating. Welcome back to you, Stacy.
Great to be here. Thanks so much, Mindy.
So now that we are 9 weeks into social distancing and this the disruption and stress that it causes, Dina, what are you hearing from clients, friends, and family about their anxiety levels and eating habits?
It's interesting. It's from one extreme to another. Some people are finding they have a lot more time to focus on their health goals, and they've been experimenting with, you know, new recipes and getting more exercise. And other people are struggling at the other end of it with stress eating and, snacking because they're home all day when they're not necessarily hungry, but they just happen to be in the kitchen. So it's a wide variety.
And Stacy, some of your clients have eating disorders. Are they finding this a particularly difficult time?
Yes, I have to say that I have had an increase in old clients that maybe have been pretty stable calling me to check in and get a little coaching boost because they are having a hard time. People have a lot of intentions to mobilize themselves for change, you know, proclaiming, yay, this is a great time for me to focus on myself and be well. And I think people are finding that they are having a hard time mobilizing themselves to follow through on their intentions in a consistent way, which creates that feeling of, they just feel a little guilty or bummed out that they are not able to have their actions match their intentions.
Over 2 months is a long time to be socially distanced, but it also has given us, as you're saying, more time to settle into a routine. So you're hearing from people that they are now able to put more emphasis on healthy eating and exercise?
You know, I'll speak from my perspective. I think that as time is moving along, I honestly am seeing that there's some consistency with the same level of interest with food eating and being healthy as the concerns are becoming bigger for people. I think I'm noticing the supermarkets aren't quite as hectic and crazy to be able to go access food, but I think people are starting to get concerned about being able to sustain some of the changes that's happening in their household, some of the financial strain. So I can't say that that's necessarily a priority, but I also wouldn't say that people are not considering it and taking it seriously.
Dina?
Yeah, so I'm finding a little bit different talking to some of my clients. Some of them are having a hard time just finding things that they need to cook in the supermarket. There's been shortages of a lot of things, which causes a lot of anxiety. So we've been working with them on just trying to find substitutes, like, you know, maybe some plant-based meals right now instead of some animal proteins. But, you know, people are people in a pandemic or not, and we are so hard on ourselves sometimes, and we tend to beat ourselves up when, when Stacy said we're not, or, you know, we have these intentions and we're not following them 100%, and we tend to be so hard on ourselves. So I'm seeing that piece of it, too. And I always encourage people just to be kind to yourself.
Right. And as you mentioned, some stores have limited the quantities of meat available for purchase. And we talked last month about not being able to find yeast and, you know, pasta and flour. And so that, as you're saying, some people are trying the plant-based recipes. We have an email about this from a listener in Falmouth who says, I made Thai chicken wraps but didn't want to buy chicken. I found a recipe that uses cauliflower instead. You roast cauliflower in the oven, stir fry some vegetables, drizzle some peanut sauce over it, and serve in lettuce bowls. Delicious, even for a 9-year-old. And, you know, cauliflower, I think cauliflower would surprise a lot of people. My husband came across this recipe from Cookie and Kate, which I highly recommend, by the way. Cookie and Kate has some amazing recipes, but it's roasted cauliflower and lentil tacos with creamy chipotle sauce as the name. And it is fat, and the lentils themselves are fabulous. But it's surprising.
Yeah. My son, who's 22, insists that he does not like cauliflower. But when I make stir fried cauli rice, he eats the whole thing and doesn't even know it's cauliflower.
Right. Exactly. I made a recipe last night. It's called healthy goulash stuffed peppers, and it has you really finely chop cauliflower, broccoli, and carrot, and you would not even know that there's any vegetables in this. It's really delicious, but again, for those who don't think they like vegetables, it's a good way to get your vegetables without having to, you know, hold your nose or something. So sometimes it works to substitute a vegetable for meat in a recipe, and sometimes you're better off just letting the vegetables shine, right? Dina, what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, this is a great time to try new things. You know, you go to the supermarket trying to find one thing and they don't have any. You know, try something new. I know some people that I've been talking to are getting Misfit boxes, which you get like a surprise shipment of vegetables. And they're trying all kinds of new things that they never had before, like Calabri or some of these different vegetables, and they do shine, and they find that they enjoy them. And then there's nothing wrong if you can't find fresh vegetables at the market. There's nothing wrong with frozen vegetables. They're just as healthy as fresh, and you can do all kinds of things with those as well. So I think right now we just have to be flexible. I pretend like, you know, I'm in an episode of Chopped, and I have my mystery basket. What can I make with these ingredients?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great idea.
I win every time.
Of course you do. So the Impossible Burger is a plant-based product that's supposed to have the mouthfeel, taste, and smell of beef. You can get it at restaurants and grocery stores. Have either of you tried it?
Yeah,
I have not.
I have tried the Impossible Burger. I have to say that I'm a flex of everything-tarian. And the Impossible Burger, as far as texture, mouthfeel, not only my own experience, but feedback from a lot of people, is quite pleasant for a plant-based alternative. I actually heard from a lot of clients that the Impossible Burger version of the sausages were quite good as well. And I have to say, I did buy them and they're in my freezer. And as you're asking me, I'm just remembering I put them in there. So I do have to pull them out and try them. They are a bit high in fat. And that's part of what I think makes the mouthfeel and experience similar to a non-plant-based option. So it's a great option for a playful experience. I wouldn't necessarily recommend that as somebody's main source of an alternative to a burger, though.
I will tell you, I don't know if it was one of the plant-based burger products. I thought it was terrible. I did not like it at all. I made a shepherd's pie, and honestly, I thought it looked and tasted like dog food. I'm like, well, not for me. Dan just texted and said he does not like the taste of the Impossible Burger either. So I guess, I don't know. Try it, I guess, and see, right? So now that we are, yeah.
One thing I'll say about any burger alternative, say across the board, any veggie burger, whether it's not something that you're making from scratch necessarily, but I will say that trying most alternative burgers, the more that you make it like a classic burger, say with a bun, a tomato, lettuce, and, you know, make it like you might normally make a burger, I tend to find that the appeal is higher than if you're having it without all that blend.
Right, right. That might make a difference, sure. All right, so now that we're in full on spring, it could be an impetus to change what we're buying, preparing, and eating. Farmers markets will soon open up and running, which is, you know, is a great place to get locally grown foods. But what kind of produce is readily available and healthy in most grocery stores at this time of year?
You want to take that, Dean, or do you?
Well, typically things in the spring would be asparagus. A lot of the, some of the lettuces start to come out now. The cold hardy greens. There's always things that you can find like ramps and chives, which are delicious. And I know I have a vertical herb garden. I live in a condo, so I have a small space, but on my deck I grow a vertical herb garden. My chives are starting to come back up.
I also like beets and strawberries are going to be, I'm eager to have the strawberries come out. It's one of my favorite times of year when those fresh strawberries are starting to show up in farmers markets.
Yeah, the way they are, sure good too. Now, there are some vegetables out there that don't fulfill the nutritional quotient for a vegetable. For example, corn, which everybody loves corn. It's so unfortunate. Dina, what are the other common vegetables that don't fit the nutritional bill?
So I actually think that there are no bad vegetables, including corn.
Oh, yay.
right, so don't feel so bad about it. Corn actually does have some health benefits, some phytonutrients. So there are no bad fruits, there are no bad vegetables. You think about eating a wide variety of all the different colors that are out there, including the white ones like onions and garlic. They're all, nutritional powerhouses.
I would just for people who do like corn, that some of the phytonutrients that Dina is referencing, such as lutein and zeaxanthin, have been linked to reducing macular degeneration.
There's also some
evidence that some of these nutrients reduce cancer. So just like Dina said, it's gotten a bad rap, but as we've started to look deeper into the science of some of the plant pigment chemicals and understanding the health benefits that they have, we are expanding our understanding of all the different colors and how those pigments are what transfer to the body the health benefits.
Ooh, that's good to know. So it's really the variety. Having a variety is the key then, right? Don't just eat corn.
right, exactly.
I'd like to add, too, think about it, corn in its whole state. I'm talking about, corn in the cardboard, corn kernels.
Right.
Once the corn is highly processed and put into, a corn chip or something like that, that's when it loses some of its nutrition.
Right. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about, it's our healthy lifestyle program. We're talking on strategies to create and maintain positive, healthy relationships with food and our bodies. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. We hope you'll share what you're doing in your kitchens with us. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. With us is Dina Irwin, integrative nutritionist at the Community Health Center of Cape Cod, and Stacy Richmond, an integrative nutrition therapist and founder of Kind Eating. All right, so many people are getting excited about growing their own food this year, and we'll talk more about that on the gardening show next week with Roberta Clark. But Dina, are you hearing from people that they're going to give a vegetable garden a try this year?
Yes, many of my patients have been dabbling in vegetable gardening. I think it's great that they're out there doing that. It's so good for us just to dig in the dirt and get all those benefits of those good healthy dirt germs, and teach the kids where the food is coming from, and get outside, breathe in fresh air, sunlight. It's just the whole experience is so beneficial.
Yeah, Stacy, are you seeing the same thing?
Yes, a lot of people are working on planting their seeds, and somebody was telling me how they just purchased from Home Depot a little locked together 4x4 raised bed that they are going to explore and experience. So I'm hearing more from people, also encouraging people who feel a little more intimidated to explore pots, right, of course, on the deck. And for some people, I even just suggest starting with your own little herb pot so they can gain a little bit of confidence that something nice will grow from their effort.
Yeah. Yeah, well, like, again, we'll talk more about how to do that with Roberta next week. But, you know, it's also amazing when you get kids involved, as you were saying, Dina. I know when my daughter was young, vegetables that she would not eat, once we grew them in the garden, she she's still to this day would prefer the garden broccoli over the store-bought broccoli. And it really, there really is a taste difference in many of the vegetables when you grow them yourself, and it's such a sense of accomplishment, not only for you but for the kids to see that and really understand where their food is coming from.
Oh, I agree, and your intention is also infused into the food. You know, you're growing that food with loving intention, and I think the love adds a lot of difference to the taste as well.
Yeah. I'm wondering if people are still on their bread baking kick. Our producer, Amy, scored a jar of yeast last week, the first that she's seen since February. I'm not sure if that's a sign that production of baking staples is increasing or if demand is waning. Do we know?
I've actually heard less bread baking experiences from people, so I'm not quite sure, but I will say that I'm seeing a little less of that than I was.
Yeah, I guess after a while, how many loaves of bread can you bake, right?
I think people might have been, they're moving on to muffins or something else. I had a sourdough starter going for a while.
Now, carbohydrates have gotten a lot of attention in recent years, particularly for those trying to lose weight or cut calories. But not all carbohydrates are bad. Stacey, how do you tell a good carb from a bad carb?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the simple way to start thinking about carbohydrates is asking yourself, is this close to the form that it grew in nature? And the closer you eat any food in the form that it grew in nature, the more nutritious it's going to be, likely the higher in fiber. It's going to retain more nutrients. It's when we start to take foods in nature and we start to move it along in the processing that it becomes more foreign and more difficult. Not difficult, but for some bodies, the biology of the body finds it more simplistic. The fiber doesn't have the opportunity to slow down how it enters the bloodstream. So in terms of carbohydrates, I would really encourage people to eat more whole foods that you can see where it came from, brown rice, quinoa, oatmeal, all fruits and vegetables in their whole form, something that is then made into, say, crackers or even when we start to look at bread in particular, you know, some breads are very processed and some are maintain a lot more wholeness. So I would say in general, that would be a nice balanced way for people to feel good about the quote unquote carbohydrates they're putting in their body.
Dina, you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I just think the more intact the food, the healthier it is, like Stacey was saying, in its whole form. You know, if you, like we were talking about the corn chips earlier, you know, corn, yes, that's intact. But once you process it into a corn chip, you know, it's much less healthier.
How about if I put some nice fresh...
in something, the better.
How about if I put some nice fresh salsa on that corn chip?
That would help a lot.
I love those corn chips. How is your eating?
It's okay for you to eat corn chips, but, you know, I think we do all need to find some balance in life.
Exactly.
Some enjoyment is okay.
We're wondering how your eating has changed over the course of the stay-at-home order. Are you looking for comfort foods or more excited about vegetables and fruits now that it's spring? Share your stories of what's happening in your kitchens with us. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. For a long time, we were told to avoid fat. You could buy pretty much anything low or no fat. Now we know there are good fats and bad fats. Dina, can you explain that?
Oh, yeah. I'm so glad that fat-free craze is over. Our bodies need some fat for many different reasons, to absorb some nutrients, for our nervous system. Think about getting fats from a lot of vegetable sources like olive oil, avocado, fats from nuts and seeds. You know, those are some of the good, healthiest fats that we can eat. And I always encourage people to have a little healthy fat with every meal. You know, if you put fat-free salad dressing on your salad, you're not going to be absorbing some of the nutrients from the vegetables. You know, so put some olive oil and vinegar and enjoy it.
Stacey, anything you want to add?
I encourage people to primarily focus on plant-based oils such as the extra virgin olive oil, avocado oil, and also to have a variety of fats. So some of those oils they don't maintain their high health benefit when you cook with them as much as something like ghee, which is a form of clarified butter, or coconut oil. So I encourage people to rotate and use a variety of oils, because each oil, if one is emphasized over the other, may not contribute to health as well as having all of them in balance and a little bit of variety.
I remember, and I don't remember the reason why, I read something a while back that was talking about low and no fat products, that you should not give them to children, but I can't remember why. Do either of you know why that no fat is not good for kids?
Well, I mean, for brain development, I mean, right off the bat, the brain is 70% lipids. And so when you are restricting or cutting back on dietary fats for children, you know, there's a significant concern with that child being fully nourished, nourishing the brain development. So that would be one of my first thoughts about that question.
Yeah. I'm also thinking, you know, kids sometimes, you know, they can be pretty picky eaters. And if you have kids who are picky, it seems like, what are the pasta? They want mac and cheese, you know, pasta with Parmesan cheese. And it seems like they just live off of pasta. What are some ways we can get some more nutrition into kids who happen to be picky eaters?
Well, you know, one of the things I think we started talking about, and Dina mentioned the last time, is how to take, I always have people look at what is it that they're normally eating? So making a list of their usual foods and then brainstorming with them to see if there's a way to modify a familiar food. So instead of trying to do a novel offering, children are going to be a little less open to something that may be brand new. So looking at what you might currently serve, we'll take mac and cheese. Is that a homemade mac and cheese? Okay, so how could that recipe be modified? Perhaps adding a little bit of pureed cannellini beans to the cheese sauce, so you're actually increasing some of the fiber and some of the nutrients without anybody knowing that that's being added. Similar, any type of cooked pureed vegetable blend could be incorporated. I do know for some children, they can spot, you know, one little speck of green that
oh my gosh,
see
yes.
in their red sauce. But, you know, it's still worth the effort and the attempt. And it isn't about just sneak eating. It's also about normalizing the experience of what I'm going to call food exposure and food challenges for children. So this is all new for them. And to let it be okay that they maybe have some fear, but to continue to expose. So I encourage, say, families having a family meal together. I'm going to just say pick broccoli. The child doesn't want to eat broccoli. How to have the family to model eating these foods and putting a small portion of that food on the plate. And so the first step may not be getting that child, quote unquote, to eat that. The first step may be allowing that child to tolerate the broccoli taking up some real estate on their plate with their other food. And, you know, and so some kids get really upset or they want to throw the broccoli off their plate. So sometimes I'll say, well, let's back it up and say, let's make it more of a positive, and that eventually what happens is once that food settles on the plate and the child observes that this is a normal behavior that my parents are enjoying, sometimes parents find over time that they might pick it up and take a little nibble and put it down. So So instead of thinking about how we want to get this into kids, how to start to create a more supportive process to help kids build confidence that they can learn to tolerate trying new foods.
Yeah, I've got some tips myself here. You mentioned broccoli, and my grandson was not eating his broccoli, but I found that if you make a game, and he's five, so it doesn't work with all ages, but if you make a game out of some of these things, he's more apt to eat them. So what we do with the broccoli is he pretends he's a dinosaur and he's eating the trees. The chicken he had the night before last, that he wouldn't eat the day before he ate because we were saying they were stars that were going into a black hole, the black hole being his mouth. And he ate all of the chicken, which is very unusual for him. I also find that sometimes if you're not focused on the food, you're not saying, please try this or eat your dinner, and we're just engaged in other conversation, he forgets and he just starts eating it.
Just a couple tips.
Yeah, but when you can make some kind of a game out of it, it seems to work pretty well. We have an email from Patty who says, cooking itself is a comfort, so everything we are making are the items that used to be prepackaged convenience, homemade crackers, hummus, muffins, pizza dough. They are so good that we probably won't go back to the prepackaged variety. That goes back to taste, right? When you do that, you find out, wow, why haven't I been doing this all along? Time, maybe, right? Time constraints.
Yeah, that's great.
That is fantastic. And I think too, when you, like we were saying, when you cook your own food, when you grow your own food, it tastes better. There's just something about the whole experience.
Yeah. And we have another email. Want to learn more about spices and which spices go with what foods best. When the refrigerator is low on choice, choosing the wrong spices to make a refrigerator soup can ruin all of the ingredients. That's a tough one, isn't it? Yeah. I guess it's fun to experiment with spices. And I used to be very afraid to do that. But I find when I'm making something, I just smell the spice. And for some reason, just that smelling of it, I can go, oh yeah, that will go, or nope, that's not going to work. What are your thoughts on experimenting with spices?
Go for it. I know there are some really good spice charts available too, that, you know, if you need a little bit of assistance, that with some different flavor profiles, that might help you out a lot. But yeah, definitely don't be afraid of it.
What I like to tell people to do is, pretty much, I don't think you can go wrong with buying your traditional Italian spice blend. And your traditional Italian spice blend is the classic parsley, thyme, oregano, basil. And using that as a foundational spice, there is, and I forget what brand it is, but it might be McCormick, but there's one brand of Italian spice that has an outlier spice that I know occasionally. And I can't recall if it's tarragon, or I don't know what the spice is, but I always say, you know, working with those Italian spices as a beginner is a great way to go. So, you know, thyme's a little bit stronger, oregano stronger, but parsley's pretty benign, basil's pretty benign. Generally, all of those spices go great with most meat and fish preparations. So I like to steer people in that direction as a way to start building a little bit of confidence and starting with just a little bit. And, you know, again, attuning to your own taste. And it's a way to build that connection with the dish. And as somebody does that and finds that, well, I thought it was good, my family accepted it, it can start to build on, you know, some more confidence, and then graduate to, you know, college level spices, maybe curry and something like that.
Yeah, and
I find eggs are a great vehicle to experiment with different spices too. Just take, you know, a scrambled egg, and one day you put, you know, turmeric on it, and taste that, and then the next day experiment with a different herb, and it's just a nice kind of vehicle to experiment with all the different flavors.
Yeah, and I would say also with sauces, experimenting. You know, we've been making our own tomato sauce because we have time, and my husband experimented with he put chorizo in the sauce instead of hamburger, and it is amazing. crumbled chorizo, some onion, crushed. He uses crushed and diced tomatoes, and oh my gosh, it's fabulous.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yeah, yeah. Now, portion control can be a challenge, and most of us don't want to weigh or measure out amounts. So, do either of you have any tricks or ideas to help us eyeball portion sizes?
Well, one of the things I like to encourage people to do is, no matter what they're eating, is to put it into a container of some sort. And if somebody's concerned about managing portions or weight management, I encourage them for the first one or two portions to actually count it out or measure it and look at that portion in the bowl or container that they've chosen, and modify the container so that they don't have to worry about measuring. They've cued themselves so they know that they have a certain container that they put that particular snack in.
I tend to focus more on having people use their intuitive eating. In other words, listen to what your body's telling you. You know, eat slowly, mindfully, enjoy what you're eating, and stop eating when you feel comfortably full but not overstuffed. And your body knows how much it needs. We just need to tune into it and listen to it.
Right. We're looking for your cooking adventures, so I hope you'll share with us. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a break.
Listen. The late Dave Mash making fish cakes in Katahmet. You're listening to the Cape and Islands NPR stations.
You're listening to The Point, and we are talking about strategies to maintain positive, healthy relationships with food and our bodies. Have meat shortages changed what you're cooking and eating? What are some of the substitutions you've made that have been surprisingly good? We hope you share your cooking adventures with us. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. With us this morning is Dina Irwin, integrative nutritionist at the Community Health Center of Cape Cod, and Stacey Richmond. She's an integrative nutritionist, therapist, and founder of Kind Eating. We have an email from Eleanor who says, it's been veggie burgers for us this winter and spring. While I've been a vegetarian since age 5, my husband of 47 years was always a carnivore. We never discussed it. I just cook separate proteins, never a problem. This winter, there was no big deal about his transition. He just says he's enjoying the veggie burgers more, both mentally and physically. Plus, there's an ever-expanding variety to explore. Roasted cauliflower, broccoli, and squash is an added discovery. Most shocking of all, he's even gotten involved in cooking on so many levels. It's been a win-win. Thank you, Eleanor, for sharing that. And, you get into habits sometimes. I know, what's the protein going to be? And you're always turning to like fish or meat. And for maybe the 6 months or so, maybe a little longer, we've been trying to incorporate more vegetarian dishes. And I have to say, I have been quite surprised at how delicious some of these combinations can be. I kind of used to think they were boring, to be honest, but there, again, I'm going to go back to Cookie and Kate, who has some great recipes. There's another one we tried. It's become one of our favorite. It's extra vegetable fried rice. And it comes together really quickly. It's fantastic. I would highly recommend giving it a try. And I know that you both would as well, right?
Totally. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. You could throw anything into a fried rice.
Yeah.
It's a great way to use up whatever you can find. Maybe some edamame beans. Legumes are such a great source of protein. And you could throw anything into a burger as well. Plant-based burgers. You could do black bean burgers. There's just so many options.
Yeah. I do like the veggie burgers, but I don't like the plant-based burger stuff, but I do like the veggie burgers.
I'd like to share one of the conversations that's been coming up a lot that's a great standard type of a recipe but has so much variety depending upon somebody's preferences and choices is shepherd's pie. And, you know, the different vegetable combinations can be very creative. You can use a meat base or lentils. Use your own respective broth, experiment with different spices. You could even experiment not with just white potato topping, sweet potato topping. So that was one of the most versatile dishes that people have been exploring and experimenting with.
Yeah, you know, I think I'm going to take those lentils from that Cookie and Kate cauliflower taco recipe. Those would be great in a shepherd's pie.
Absolutely.
Let's talk to Sue, who's giving us a call from Tisbury. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Mindy. I'm calling from West Tisbury, and this has to do with what you were talking about earlier about what's growing here and ready to eat now. And it's rhubarb. Don't forget that.
Yeah.
And it's you can do a lot with it. You can make, of course, make desserts with it, but you can also make a less sweetened version of a compote and put it on, you could put it on meat or all sorts of other things. So I just wanted to put in a word for rhubarb. It grows here in the
country. That's a great idea.
Yeah, it's and that's easy to grow. You're right. And, of course, strawberry rhubarb pie.
Right.
You can
use rhubarb without strawberries also, so because the strawberries aren't ready yet. So you can make, if you make a compote with it, so you cut up your rhubarb and just put a little bit of sugar in it and let the water come out of the cut rhubarb, and then you bring that to a boil, and then you can use that. I make cookie bars with it. So you make a crust, but it's an easy crust to make.
And that sounds good.
And then you can put, like, I put sliced almonds on top. It's really good, and it's a way to use the rhubarb without the strawberries.
Yeah, that sounds great. Sue, thanks for that suggestion. Appreciate that. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. John is calling from Orleans. Hi, John.
Hi. Suggestion for reading. The book of Francis Moore LaPaye's Diet for a Small Planet has very many vegetarian recipes in it. Diet for a Small Planet, Francis Moore LaPaye. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, John. Thanks for that. We're always looking for some interesting recipes, right? Now, one thing, living alone during social distancing can be very difficult. Even if you love living alone, not only are you not seeing people socially at work or in the coffee shop, you're having to eat alone. It can be hard to muster enthusiasm for making a healthy meal for one or eating leftovers for days because the recipe makes multiple servings. So what are your thoughts on that?
It is difficult. I know, like, my mom has been either FaceTiming me or sending me pictures of her daily dinner meal. So it's almost like, you know, we're having a meal together. I think using technology in any way that you can to help bring us closer is good. And, you know, and remember, even though you're alone, you are worth it. You're worth the time and the effort. You can always freeze things for later if you're making things, several portions and it's just you. The freezer is your friend.
That's a good idea. Yeah. And we'd love to know, if you live alone, what are you making that's nutritious, delicious, and doesn't feed an army? 866-999-4626 or thepoint@capeandislands.org. Of course, food and eating is such a social activity. Many of us come together around food, and some people have been cooking a recipe together than sitting down to a meal together. I'm hearing that a lot of people are doing dinner parties and things via Zoom, so still able to kind of have that social component and distance at the same time.
Yes, I have had some clients actually where they, to connect with their mother in particular, would both pick a novel recipe, and they would actually Zoom and make the recipe each themselves. So they're experiencing, exploring, cooking the recipe together. They're visiting while they're cooking. And then when the meal is complete, they enjoy the experience of trying what they made. So that was, it's a little twist on some of the Zoom food part and connecting part.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know we had our Passover Seder by Zoom last month. And it's, you know, we just have to do what we have to do right now to stay connected.
Yeah. Another email says, I never understood why people posted what they are eating on Facebook before. Now I enjoy people sharing their pictures and recipes because the hardest part of coming up with dinner is finding the idea of what to cook.
All right. So that's inspiring.
Yeah. And now turning to sugar, we didn't talk about sugar. A lot of people are looking to minimize their sugar intake. So what are the health risks associated with too much sugar, and what defines too much or an excess of sugar for most people?
Mm. Well, one of the things that I know we did touch upon last time with sugar is that sugar can be, well, you know, sugar is a big topic. So we have the spectrum of sugar. We have natural sugar, processed sugar, et cetera. But generally speaking, the more, like we've spoken about, the more processed the sugar, the less nutrients it's going to share with our bodies. So natural sugars, such as fruits in particular, would be a preferred way to enjoy sugar. Some of the more concentrated natural sweets would be honey and maple syrup. They are very sugar-like, so when they are digested by the body still recognizes it as sugar. However, fruits tend to have fiber with the sweet flavor, so it has a slower impact on how it will enter the bloodstream and will provide some nutrients.
Yeah, I agree. And the other thing is, we were talking about spices earlier, and I'm always encouraging people to use things like cinnamon, cardamom, some of those sweet-tasting spices where they would naturally use sugar. You could put cinnamon in your coffee. You could put it on your oatmeal. That's going to add not only some health benefits, but a nice punch of flavor where you won't even miss having the added sugar.
Does your body need sugar?
Not from added sugar. It does not.
Mm. So just the natural sugars, like in fruit and things like that.
From your intact grains, your whole carbohydrate foods.
Yeah. Is there evidence that sugar is addictive?
Well, I would say that that's a little bit of a can of worms. In the few moments we have left, I know that we spoke a bit about this a couple episodes ago, that the short version of that is that for some people, sugar does activate body biochemistry that makes it difficult for them to stop eating it. But I definitely think it warrants a longer conversation.
Okay. So we'll save that for a topic on an upcoming show. All right. We have an email from Marcia, who's a master gardener. And she says, up and harvestable in May are asparagus, which can be planted as late as April here on the Cape, but no harvest the first year. Rhubarb, which does great in a box, 3 to 4 plants in a 4x4 box with good soil and a sack of manure each year. Garlic is up, and I keep a crop of garlic just for the green leaves to cut and come again. Green garlic pesto makes fantastic garlic spread on bread and adds to dishes of all ethnicities. Red Russian kale has been up for a month and is going to seed now. The leaves are perfect size and texture right now. Save the seed and plant it now or anytime through November. Apples are in bloom now, so plenty more to come. All good things.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And boy, that's another one. That asparagus doesn't taste anything like what you get in the store.
No,
homegrown
not
asparagus.
At all.
It's worth the wait. She's right. You know, you don't, that first year you don't get much of a harvest, but it's worth it to plant the garlic. I mean, the asparagus. Garlic is another interesting thing. There's so many things you can do with garlic.
Well, one of the things about garlic, it falls in the allium food family, which is onions, leeks, chives, and garlic. And these particular foods are very high in sulfur compounds, which are very powerful antioxidants for the body. So any way to incorporate any of the plants and foods from that family are going to, especially this time of year, really benefit anybody who's prone to allergies, in particular onion thyme and quercetin. And quercetin is a bioflavonoid that can dial back some of the inflammatory response with allergies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good to know. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. What are some thoughts for, you know, as we're all home, and we sort of touched on this earlier, you know, you're walking through the kitchen and sometimes maybe grabbing a snack, even though you're not hungry. It's sort of, I guess, unconscious eating, right? We're just sort of not, before we even realize it, we're like, oh, why am I eating this? I'm not even hungry. Some thoughts on how we can stop doing that.
Yeah. Well, I could just ask yourself, what am I doing? You know, just a little mindful check-in. Am I hungry? Am I not hungry? Maybe I'm thirsty. You know, if you're in the kitchen, that's a great time to make a cup of herbal tea to sip on. You still get the hand-to-mouth motion. You're hydrating. Just a little mindful check-in.
I know one of the things, if somebody finds that they're really getting caught in this cycle and next thing you know, there's a food in their hands, which happens to many people, including myself, to maybe consider moving where you put the food so it isn't quite so subconscious, to subconsciously mm-hmm. just open the same old cabinet, maybe move things that are in a cabinet to a drawer or, you know, so that way it creates a more conscious pause.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just thought of another trick for helping kids. You know, one of the things my grandson doesn't like the meals. He always wants to just snack. And what I do in the afternoon before dinner is I'll give him a carrot or some cucumber or whatever the vegetable might be that we're having in dinner. So when we get to dinner, he says, I don't want to eat that, the carrots. He's already eaten it. He doesn't exactly. even realize. He hasn't come on to my trick yet. And actually, he will eat more carrot in the snack than he will at dinner. He might eat two or three little bites of carrot. He'll eat a whole carrot at snack time. So, yeah. So that's another trick, is to kind of give them, you know, the fresh fruits and vegetables at snack time in the afternoon, and then you don't have to fight with them at dinner.
And the kids have little tummies, you know. Snacks for them are great.
Yeah. So just in the last couple minutes that we have, I guess the advice here is variety, right? So what are we considering? We want to try a little bit of everything? Different colors? Well, what are we putting on our pizza?
Yeah, I would say one of the themes that might come up in working with families would be eating the rainbow, considering how many colors that you can choose in a day, because of course that means there is an emphasis on produce. A lot of what we've spoken about today, greens, a lot of greens, what can you eat that's red, maybe red radishes, strawberries, what would be purple, maybe that would be some purple cabbage or some beets, blue would be blueberries. So part of this is really maybe starting to think a little bit about not only variety, but color. How many colors am I eating in a day?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like we were talking about earlier, too, some of the that are out there with, you know, your peanut butters and nuts and seeds, like that peanut Thai dish that mm-hmm. you mentioned. You know, where else can we get our protein from? The, you know, legumes with the black bean burger, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Lee writes, great to hear Diet for a Small Planet mentioned, as that book, along with a Connecticut butcher shop selling horse meat for human consumption, caused me to become a vegetarian in the early 70s. Fast forward, I'm now vegan, and the vegan products in regular stores are amazing. Vegan ice cream, vegan cheeses, and so much more. Thank you, Lee, for sharing that. And that's true. So many more choices if you're vegan or if you're gluten-free. It's amazing how many choices we have out there now. Dina Irwin, integrative nutritionist at the Community Health Center of Cape Cod, and Stacy Richmond, integrative nutrition therapist and founder of Kind Eating. Thank you both for your suggestions and tips today. We really appreciate that. We'll talk to you next
Thank
month.
Thank you, and have a great day.
Thanks. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.